You are listening to The Night War, an audio companion. For more than 65 years, the Night War has taught us what it takes to fight a war, and what war takes from those who fight.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night, when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard.
June 2nd. Mail. Letters from Ma. One for me and one for Steve. I know Ted must have gotten the same one. I guess the entire world knows D-Day is coming. Ma is talking about all the neighborhood going to mass a hell of a lot more than they usually do. With as many guys as I meet from home, it's no wonder. There can't be many sons left in Brooklyn. Ma's handwriting not so neat as it normally is. I think she must worry a lot normally, but she's never known in advance that her sons were going into action like this, and I can easily imagine her hand shaking. When she hears about what the commandos get up to, it is only after they got a newsreel out of the pictures and she knows we are okay. Poor Ma. Poor mothers everywhere.
They will be sore tried by night and by day, without rest, until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war.
War is mostly swinging like a grandfather clock, from the dullest boredom of your life to fear so sticky, like oil it won't wash off, that it takes days to realize you've swung back to being bored. But I think the worst of it is this awful anticipation in your gut with nothing to do but knowing it's happening soon. Where we are, the activity is unbelievable. Never seen so many ships in my entire life, and I worked at a shipyard. It seems like every man could ride to France in his own fucking boat if he had to. And all any of us have to do is clean our weapons and look at maps and read letters from home and wait and wait and wait and wait. It is like a hive of bees in your stomach, a hive of bees inside everyone you see. So we are all just one big mass of nervous men who can't sit still and who've got nothing to do but wait. God, but this waiting is awful.
Soldiers, sailors and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force. You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
Later. Postponed. We even got in the goddamn boats, and then it was called off. I suppose, thank Christ, as I have been in a seaborne landing in bad weather. And if it isn't awful enough on its own, nobody wants to be sitting in the middle of 20 guys up chucking their guts out. Everybody just wants to get going, though. Not geared up anymore, but just waiting. You'd think we were school kids sitting through mass on our birthdays instead of soldiers trained for combat, with how goddamn twitchy we all are. Sister Callaghan would be slapping the backs of heads left and right if she was here.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year
1944. June 6th. Ike said on the radio, "The eyes of the world are upon you. I will settle for Teddy's, Steve's, Jack's, Gabe's, and the rest of the fellas, Ma's, Dad's, and Curly's, if we can all just somehow make it home."
I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
Coming home. Haven't slept a wink at night, worrying if she's all alone. Wonder when
June 7th. Pitcher clocked me in the head once at the ballpark when I was maybe 13. I remember Steve going after him, Sidney O'Keefe, spitting curses at him like it was on purpose, even though everybody knew half the pitches he threw were going to go wild. I remember hearing Steve scrap with Sid and the other kids, yelling. But everything was sort of thick and slow, like a record going at the wrong speed. A 78 at 33. Or maybe where my head was Technicolor and the rest of the world radio. Only my antenna was busted. My antenna's busted now, too. Maybe more busted than it's ever been. Or just rusted. All of us alive. Steve shot in the thigh, but okay somehow, thank fucking Christ. We are in a church with about 45 other guys. The whole place quiet as Borough Park on a Friday night. Just guys breathing. All any of us can possibly be hearing are the guns, the 88s, the way sand is under your boots when it's read through. Ears ringing, men screaming, the buzz saws hitting the sand like each bullet's a lightning strike. And the sand sprays up like when a guy gets hit in an artery. Tripped over a leg by itself. This is the only thing my antenna can pick up. Is me tripping over some guy's leg. And when I fell, it was right into some other guy's guts. How do you stop seeing this shit when it hits you in the face like this? And it is all that even seems to fit inside my head these days. I keep thinking each battle I am in that somehow it'll be like the last one, and that it'll be like how me and Steve saw Snow White about 5 times in 5 nights, and you know what's coming after a while. But I have been in this fight for almost a year now. And every time it feels like it is the first time. June 8th. Word is the drop was a real snafu for the airborne, and they are scattered everywhere. Asked everyone I could find from the 101st or 82nd if they have seen Teddy, but no one has. Newsmen here wanted us to go back to the beach and act out what we did. Steve hates saying no to anybody, but I was about to get myself court-martialed. I was mad as a red-ass dog, Powell, after they asked, until Monty stepped in and told them to pound sand, asking us to play pretend. For fuck's sake. June 9th. When we finally sat down on D-Day, after the fighting stopped for us. We had K-rations, and Dernier showed up with a bottle of hooch, just as god-awful as the stuff me and Steve used to get drunk off of in school. And not too far away, there were some other fellas, and one of them started singing Jimmy Dorsey's tune with Bob Eberly and Kitty something, I think. And even though the song could not be more different, for a second, I could have sworn I was in Italy, listening to Rossi sing. It is how he got to be called Lily, after Lily Pons. He could sing like you never heard anybody sing, except if you're ushering at the opera, like Ted's pal Billy Wesley used to do before he joined up. To this day, I think it is the most beautiful thing I ever heard. Nobody knew the words, it was in French, but with a song like that and hearts in the condition ours were in, you don't really need to know what the words are. Poor Rossi. To think he was just a kid who could sing like that and could have gone places. And instead, he's in the ground. June 10th. You know what your ma used to say, Buck. Rub a little dirt on it and you'll be just fine, Steve said when he caught me looking at his leg. You know, for the longest time, I liked that me and Mrs. Rogers treated Steve like he was a regular fella, not a cripple. And now I find myself wishing maybe she would have said, if you find yourself with a Nazi bullet in your leg, don't you fucking volunteer for goddamn night raid, Stephen. We were all very tired, but there's a job to be done, isn't there? Word is a ranger company holed up in a little town with hard fighting, Saint-Martin-de-Mer, and it's our job to be the cavalry. We have been resupplied, no hot food except what we could scrounge up from a cafe cellar. Felt a little bad about that, but Dernier was the first to suggest it, and as he's a frog, I guess it's fine. June 12th. We have maybe two platoons, and enough ammo for one. There are civilians everywhere, in cellars. Saw a family killed from their house getting bombed. It must have been our bombs that did it, as the Krauts haven't got shit in the air. The mother had a rosary in her hand, and I realized that, good God, it has been months since I prayed the rosary. I guess I wore out all my prayer in Italy. Two lieutenants here are Woodbridge and Garamendi. Both smart as hell and twice as tired. A couple of Kraut snipers pinning us down in the northwest corner of the town, and we think it's at least a couple PZG companies, which means we are outclassed. Steve's strong, but he did not carry a Sherman here on his back. Me, Dum Dum, and Dernier doing recon shortly. I had to break out my sternest look to get Steve to stay put, as I am not convinced about that leg at all. Also said I would write Ma and Curly, and he shut his mouth after that. But not after complaining I'm unfair. He's fucking right I'm unfair. June 15th. Heard we are linked up with the Brits. Still nothing about Teddy, though I guess I should have known that's how it'll be. My fear for him, a lump of coal in my stomach, where the minute I see an eagle patch it stokes up into a full flame. We have a day of R&R before mission at Brigand. It has been almost 10 days since D-Day. I told Steve that and he couldn't believe it either. I can't figure if it feels longer or shorter. Steve says longer, because it feels as if it has been one long drag of reloading your gun, laying down cover and fire, diving away from windows, and for me, trying to spot a fucking Kraut sniper before he gets one of our guys. There were four of them, and I got them all, but not before they got Garamendi, O'Halloran, two PFCs I didn't catch the name of, Cray Welland, Thornton, a sergeant, and Haggerty, and at least four others who just crumpled to the ground, bloody bodies. Supposed to be resting for Brigand. But of course, in my head, the same old record playing. I can't sleep for listening to it. June 17th. Never been so fucking hungry in my goddamn life. It has been nonstop since D-Day, and our guess is the guys in the supply line are grabbing any halfway decent chow and leaving the shit for the infantry. Figures. I will also thank God if I never have to eat another K-ration in my entire life. Gabe says to me, you're Irish, what the hell do you know about good food anyway? And then he starts going on about his mama and his aunties and all the food they cook. Hell, I never even heard of fucking fried okra, beans and fatback and cracklins, but I was drooling all over Betsy just hearing him rhapsodize like he was William goddamn Blake. Goes to show even the best guy you know can go mean when you don't expect it. And then I reminded Gabe that I'm half Yid, not full Mick. And Monty goes, bloody hell, mate, you really don't know good food, then. And Dum Dum busts up laughing. You're a damn Tommy, your lordship, unless you forgot. Neither do you. And then Steve starts sighing like a lovesick dame, thinking about my ma's dinner table. Me too, pal. Anyway, we are all still alive after Brigand. Killed a lot of krauts and captured probably half a platoon, and busted the guns and a couple of panzers. Took two rifle squads with us, and only four casualties. All wounded, no KIA. And at least one of those guys punched his ticket home. A Corporal Rourke, who, after the morphine, was almost laughing. I'm going home after hitting the fucking trenches with goddamn Captain America. My dance card'll be full for the next 10 years. And Steve grinned at him. Save some dames for the rest of us, pal. And then the ambulance driver got there. No KIA. Hell of a good day. June 19th. Ran across a company of the 101st and several fellows who know Teddy, and that he was okay as of a couple of days ago. Not hurt in the jump, and was at Carita. I guess the night of the jump he got mixed in with the guys from the 82nd, as it seems that everyone missed their drop zone. If the airborne was a deck of cards all in order, and the plane's a dealer, then they got shuffled up damn good. Wrote a letter to tell Ma. First letter I wrote since D-Day, and it's been so busy. I guess Schaefer got their answer as to whether we could be worthwhile attached to the regulars. We have been on about 6 patrols, just ourselves and maybe a rifle squad, not even counting Brigand. So tired, even not showering or having cots or anything doesn't bother us. It is hot, and we all stink. But we are just 7 of God knows how many tens of thousands who all stink. June 21st. Radio out, just us plus a squad. 1 MG team, 2 mortar teams, and rifles. Another patrol, but moving through a cleared village, we spotted movement. At least 2 SS companies plus panzers from the northwest and east trying to get back this road and village. This is a tight spot. Engaged yesterday enough that they halted, but we expect an assault this morning. No contact with command as the radio caught a bullet. Steve is CO, and he's never backed down from a fight in his life. But it is not just his life on the line, but 20 men's lives too, plus the 4 companies, plus battalion HQ and logistics, 15 miles west of us, and who could be at risk if these SS fuckers get through us enough to establish a front. He is weighed down by this decision in a way I have not seen him be in his entire life. This may be a last stand for us here. Cannot figure out how many are between us and HQ. Steve suggested he go by himself, since he thinks he can run the distance, but we don't know how many krauts there are. We think they want to split the division, so it could be a lot. And Steve says his leg is fine, but all his combat and shit food has done a number, even on him, and he is limping when he thinks nobody's looking. You would think the dumb, stupid punk ought to know from the last 20 years that I always keep at least one eye on him, whether he is Superman or not. Plan for now is to recon and see if we can't use TNT to set some traps. We have a couple of Kraut MG-42s and ammo we captured, plus 2 mortar teams. Gabe has got those. Rifle team has a bazooka and 6 rounds. All fully supplied with ammo, us included, and grenades. We have some very good fellows here. Sergeant Soto, Cochran and Massey, PFCs Winslow, Queen and Harris Bliss, Saunders Conaway, Dearborn and Smith, Corporals Franklin, Burgess, Roche and Rucker, Private Seeger, Keene, Johnson, Franchi and Panetta. We will have to be enough. If we aren't, we are all of us going down fighting. Later. Waiting for signal from Jim and Dernier. Should not be long now, and should be keeping watch, not writing, from this church tower. But as ever, the only thing that stops my hand shaking is this. Alone here, with overwatch to myself, a crowd in my scope. From this vantage with the moon, I can see it glint off Steve's shield. It only makes sense for this to be my job, but to have all of them looking for me to have their back, and by God, I will do my best. But to this point in the war, that has never been enough. I remember when I was little and me and Steve would get in a scrap. Again, even after promising Father Cleary not to. Again. And Mrs. Rogers would look up and say, Lord, make your strength my own. But it has seemed to me for a long time now that God has given up on us awful creatures on this bloody, bombed rock earth. At any rate, I don't know that I need strength as much as sharp eyes and steady hands. Sharp and steady is the only prayer that matters now, and the only one that can help me keep us alive. June 24th. 3 KIA, Cochrane, Harris, and Bliss. 11 WIA, Conway, Dearborn, Smith, Johnson, Keene, Roche, Burgess, Seeger, Winslow, and Panetta and Saunders. Steve hit with shrapnel, but okay. Gabe shot in the leg, but okay. Myself in the side, but it went straight through. We are off the line, and St. George Eglise has about 115 krauts to add to their church plot. Steve tearing himself up about Cochrane, Harris, and Bliss, and Panetta and Johnson, who were very badly hurt and may not make it even back to England, and he does not seem to see how goddamn lucky it is that any of us are alive at all, and with our objective secured, and another road cut off from Jerry. I am almost as shocked to be alive as when we finally put down our guns on D-Day. It feels the same. This pulsing blood in your chest that doesn't know yet the danger's past. Dog tired. The world louder and brighter, even though there are no guns or shouting or grenades exploding. Never have I seen a welcomer sight than a column of American tanks and fresh infantry wandering into the firefight of our goddamn lives. Steve, still not slept. He is agonizing over the letters he must write to the families. These are the first he's ever had to write. I hope the last. June 25th. Dreamed I was in the church tower. A second too late every time. Crowd hit the ground just seconds after Gabe and Jim and Dum Dum, then Harris and Bliss, then Monty and Dernier. All of them perfect headshots, even though Harris and Bliss got blown up, not shot. Harry there too, and Lipsy. Steve next to me like he used to be, like when he was small, not saying anything, just staring at it all, horrified out of his mind. And then I looked over and he was gone too, with a hole straight between his eyes, and I was the only one left. Everybody, even the crowds, were dead. June 27th. Went to the field hospital where Gabe is laid up. It is not that bad, just straight through his calf. Hurts like a fucker, I'm sure. But when I got there, a couple of lieutenants in clean uniforms were trying to get him on a boat to England. Powell would say, that's crooked than a snake crawling up a hogwire fence. I got a driver with an empty jeep to take me back and get Steve. Thank Christ they were only lieutenants. No doubt trying to ship Gabe back to goddamn Virginia just to get him out of the commandos. Never seen Steve angrier than when he was pointing at guys laid up in the white tent. They had to put Gabe in a separate tent. Jesus Christ, it's not like being a Negro is catching. And asking if any of them were getting shipped home. And of course only a couple were. And they were the ones missing legs, not ones with holes in them. Anyhow, they picked a fight with the wrong sons of bitches and they figured it out quick. Threatened us with a court-martial, and Steve just laughed at them as nasty as anyone ever laughed in his life. And they skedaddled finally. Steve bullied his way into a telephone hut to call back to London, and I stayed with Gabe, who was staring at the tent ceiling like his face was made of stone. I remember meeting a couple of guys from the 99th Fighter Squadron, not pilots, but a couple of aircrew who got banged up doing firefighting when we were in London in February, and the way they looked at Gabe like he was goddamn president, one of their own standing shoulder to shoulder with Captain America. And then we'd walk out on the street and suddenly he's just an uppity Negro again. All the while, he is one of the best and bravest men any of us ever knew. I told him, you know Steve won't let them kick you off, right? He'd quit first. Gabe looked just miserable and said, I know he would, and he'd disobey a direct order for it too and get arrested or court-martialed. I'm just tired of this, Sarge. I'm just so tired of it. Fact is, I'm half Jew. Of course, plenty of people hate the Mick half too, but you don't know it unless I say so. Everywhere Gabe goes, he's a Negro before he even opens his mouth. And he got shot in the fucking leg on a mission where it was 27 up against about 200 SS and a couple of tanks. And we won. And the first thing these jackasses do is try and send him away. They ought to be giving him a goddamn medal. But it doesn't help to say any of that. So I sat with them a while, and we imagined what was happening with baseball. He goes for the Orioles, but mostly cares about the Negro Leagues, so he follows the Black Sox. June 30th. Newsmen here again. I guess the reports about St. George Eglise have made it to the papers. And I think all the reporters in Normandy must be here following us around. Orders from OSS SSR to cooperate. And Steve just told me later it was the price of keeping Gabe. Only he is holding them off until Gabe is on his feet a little better. because God only knows Steve will have him at his right hand the entire newsreel just to spite everyone who thinks he shouldn't be. We are supposed to be driving over to San Jorge Glees tomorrow and pointing out everything and going through the order of battle, I suppose. I draw the line at play acting. Considering it is mostly blown up now, I think they will have a hard time getting the sharpshooter's view from the clock tower, like the fella told me he wanted. He asked me, with a smile on his face, what goes through my mind when I line up my shot. God and Country? Pearl Harbor? Uncle Sam? And I stared at him, struck dumb from the question so long I think he thought I was just plain stupid. The fact is that none of those things, not even close. It is sick, numb fear, and careful, barely breathing so that I don't miss. I must never miss. And then when I shoot, an awful thought curls up from my trigger finger to my heart. How many mothers must be praying I will miss? What kind of devil sends a .30-06 to answer a mother's prayer like that? I wonder if my own mother will even recognize me on the newsreels. I almost hope she can't.
Home will be a lonely place till I kiss that funny face. Wonder when my baby's coming home to lonely me. Wonder when my baby's coming.